You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. Man, Chuck got huge. Holy shit.
Was he, like, really jacked, or was he in, like, a bodysuit?
I kept wondering, but I was kind of, like, looking at the lines, and I'm like...
I think he's jacked.
I think he's really jacked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is the guy, like I said, who played Chuck, good lord, what is his name? Zachary Levi, a show I really love, where he's supposed to be playing the old, like a guy who works at like the equivalent of Best Buy as like a tech nerd. So he's like kind of skinny and gangly, but as it became clear as the show went on, there was a lot of we're making him wear slightly loose clothes to cover up the fact that the guy's actually slightly jacked.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's not in bad shape.
He's in the last season of Miss Maisel. He's not supposed to be jacking it, but he's a big dude.
Well, he's a big dude.
Yeah, he started getting that with Thor because he took over the role of, I forget the character's name, but basically the one that's like, you know, Robin Hood, more or less.
Right. Well, he took it over and then got fired again, so.
Yeah, and he actually said, the best thing that ever happened to me was them killing me in that movie because I got to be...
He got to be Shazam.
I was going
to
say Captain Marvel, but I guess that's not right.
No. Yeah. I did just notice that there's two Captain Marvel movies that came out in the same month, technically. That I kind of think that we live in an awesome time.
So yes. He's a funny, funny jacked, nerdy guy, so he's like Carrot Top.
But
there was some prop comedy in this.
And I'm sorry, this is off topic, but I've heard from multiple comedian friends, Carrot Top is the nicest guy in the whole fucking planet. They're all like, oh no, you want to be friends with Carrot Top. He's amazing. I'm like, seriously?
You don't get that far as a creepy Jack Ginger without being nice.
Do you think he's like Ron Weasley and then he says, Carrot Top, and a bolt of lightning comes down and he's like huge? Well, that's essentially what is going on here, except without the red hair and bad comedy. This is
shots fired.
Yes, because Carrot Top's like monitor suddenly went off. It's like, we got an alert. This is,
you know, he's googling his name,
but yeah, probably his thick ass muscular fingers could work keyboard.
It's all voice.
He's got a Twitter alert set up,
it's all Google. Search for Carrot Top.
This is the seventh DC Extended Universe film that Carrot Top is not in. Once again, he's still like, again? Directed by David...
That's why they keep getting bad reviews, actually.
Directed by David F. Sandberg, who did Lights Out, a horror movie I really enjoyed quite a bit, based on his own short. That was kind of a weirdly heroic success story in and of itself. This guy makes a tiny little horror short... Blumhouse sweeps down, goes, we want to buy that short and make it in a movie. He's like, well, is there any chance I could direct and write it? They're like, we'd love for you to. That shit never happens.
That sounds familiar.
It sounds like Blumhouse because like it's cheaper to keep you with it.
It's like, it sounds like what happened with someone a little bit closer to home with the Marvel Universe. Cargill
didn't make a Doctor Strange short.
He didn't make a Shazam short.
He didn't make a Sinister short.
Like an up and coming director.
To be fair, I'm sure he made his own Doctor Strange short at home with his action figures and hoped that somebody would like imaginarily see it.
And by becoming friends, we don't mean sucked his dick.
But it's like it's cool to see like people that make low budget horror movies transitioning like. They made both of those directors, I think, made one low budget horror movie, and then they're at the top of the budget as far as movies are made. These are the biggest movies, superhero movies.
Some of the better superhero movies of the last few years are originating because of hiring directors who like really are passionate about the project. The Russo brothers came out of nowhere, and the only reason why they got into the room is because Sam Raimi told Kevin Feige, no, you should talk to these guys, they know their stuff.
It's amazing that the guys whose previous job was working, directing episodes of Community, moved right from that to directing Captain America movies.
Yeah, and it wasn't like Community was like the most popular show, like killing the charts on NBC. Wow. It was like the show that barely could make it, but it was super intricately directed and fans loved it.
That's the thing. Yeah. At first I was like, wait, are you you do realize it wasn't popular, right? Yeah, and I was yeah, like, yeah. Oh, no, he does. Yeah, yeah, it was not a ratings hit.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, let's get back into Shazam. I'm Chris.
I'm Ben.
I'm Shazam.
No, you don't get to be Shazam.
I'm Zach. I'm Black Adam.
I'm regular Alan.
JC.
I'm Mary Marvel.
Nice skirt, by the way, Chris.
It's funny, like, in the comics, I've never been the hugest guy for Shazam. My memory of this is, because I'm old, in the 70s, there was a television live-action version of it with the whole Marvel Captain Marvel family, back when he was called Captain Marvel. And I loved that show as a kid, along with many other shows by the same production company. But I never really read the comic books. I'm totally unaware of the mythos. Didn't really have a dog in the fight whether or not this was good until I saw this trailer and went, oh, they're mixing Tom Hanks' movie Big with a superhero story. I kind of am all about this.
With plus, actually a direct reference to it in the movie.
Yeah. Really, I mean, they had to. Very nice little tip of the hat to Big. But, like, I love that they were like, also DC making a solid, okay guys, you asked for a lighter universe, you asked for a little more comedy, we're going to give it to you. And it made me super excited to see this thing. And suffice it to say, it more or less delivers what they promised on, but is it up to the quality that we expected? Well, that is a question for us to explore.
Yes.
I'm waiting for DC fans to hate it for not being dark.
I will say, in this light version of a DC movie, the villains are the seven deadly sins, and people get fucking murdered.
Well, yeah. Now when you mention
which
that
is weird.
It was a horror director, there's a scene where the seven deadly sins kill like executives in a boardroom, and it's directed very horrifically. I mean, it's still PG-13, but like, it's really pushing this movie is for a little bit younger. I think it's for younger people, and it's pushing how horrific it can be and still trying to engage, like, you know, a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old that's like, that's what this movie is for.
I did see a lot of parents who saw the early screenings last week come out and post like, I really like Shazam, but I was excited to take my kids, and now I'm not going to.
I think the monsters look better, too.
They're not great. Yeah, but like, the tone of the movie is, I don't want to call it childish, but it's definitely more whimsical than any other DC movie we have. And that
so much so that scene really jumps out.
It's jarring, yeah. And when the villain like kills some people, it's like not in a whimsical way, like someone just poofs away. Like, it is murder.
It's like,
and they kind of show the murder. It's kind of wild for the tone of the movie.
It's not bloody, but it's like
violent.
It's very violent, and people who are like gore fanatics like fill it in. Like, you know, it cuts away from a lot of stuff, but you're like, yeah that dude fell very far.
It shows,
like,
you just enough flatting. To know what the gore scene that would have happened.
Yeah.
And if this was directed by Zack Snyder.
Yeah, people get their heads eaten off. Like, I mean, that happens.
Yeah. Well, let's
like
go.
You do.
The basic story, as you said, Zach, after the movie was over, just read Jeff Johns' run on Shazam.
I'm shocked. Does it show who wrote it? Because it is
Says Henry Gayden.
Okay, well, that's not Jeff Johns.
Yeah, Jeff Johns is not credited even as story by or inspiration.
I am absolutely shocked because this is beat for beat New 52 Volume 1. You know, what? It's not there. I don't think it was issues. I think they just made a volume of, like, his origin, and this is it. It's, like, the same character, the same personality. They changed Billy Batson from, like, kind of like a, you know, pure of heart character to like the last resort. You know, it's what we had to go with, and he's flawed, and that like makes a lot of sense because back, you know, when in the 40s when they were just like inventing the superhero genre, there wasn't as much character, and now like we don't want to just see a Mary Sue, like we want to see like a flawed character, and that's what we get. And, you know, well, that's kind of with the Jeff Johns' origin. So I don't know. If that's what it is, you know, it's that beat for beat, even the very ending. If you've read it, you're going to know what happens. So you're not going to be surprised. And it's kind of like a bit of a letdown because I wanted to see something really cool. And I saw exactly what I'd already read, and I was like,
I had not read it. I, like I said, so this was all a surprise to me, including the very bratty version of Billy Batson. Now, if you don't know the basic story of Shazam, and this is the most basic notes, like, Shazam is a magical superhero who's essentially Superman, except he can shoot lightning.
He's magic-based.
Yeah, he's magic-based.
I mean, he's legally similar to Superman because DC sued Fawcett, even though they're totally two way fucking different superheroes.
Fawcett was the company that created
Shazam. Yeah, and then they bankrupt them, and then they bought them. Like, so DC is fucking evil as fuck. At least they were, and then now they own Shazam, and now they can't call him Marvel.
I don't know. Like, if you're pulling Zack Snyder, they might still be evil.
Well, that's the thing, though, is like, well, I'll get into that in a second, but like, all right, so Billy Batson, little kid, given the power by this ancient wizard, played here by Jimon Hounsou, who is the last surviving member of a council of wizards.
Getting that DC and that Marvel money.
Yeah. Exactly. He's like, here is the power. All you have to do is say my name, because his name is Shazam. Say the word Shazam. Now, in the original comics, the character's name, the superhero went by Captain Marvel. After a long series of legal issues, they were like, okay, I guess we're just going to call him Shazam.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that feels like that would be a huge disadvantage against villains knowing your magic.
Who are you? You know, it's like what I say when I turn into myself.
It's also a really Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster hole.
But he's from there. But he's just like a 15-year-old kid when he gets this power. So the deal is that from now till the end of time, he'll be a 15-year-old kid who can say Shazam, and he turns into a fully grown man who is arguably more powerful than Superman.
Yeah.
But flawed, his essential flaw is he's just a kid in his mentality.
Yeah. He's a brat, like you said. He's a thief. He's a cheat. Like, it starts off, and it's, like, very clear, like, look, he's on the other side of the law. It's, like, very clear in that imagery.
And he loves tits.
Yeah, which is
like a 15-year-old does.
Like, yeah. I like how they included that because that is realistic. Like, that's what the 14-year-old
thinks about nothing.
It's like, I want to go to a titty bar. That's what you're gonna do. You're like, I'm gonna go try beer. I'm gonna do all this shit that like only adults can do. Yeah. And he does it, and it's awesome.
So here the idea is like, weirdly, this starts with the villain origin, Dr. Savannah, although he hasn't gotten his PhD yet in this context.
Where honestly, you kind of identify the villain like, honestly, I'm with that guy. Everything about this is fucked up.
I mean, the villain is a little kid when we first meet him who is given the option to become Shazam, but fails a magic test and is told by the very insensitive and probably not trained in child psychology wizard Shazam, you are not worthy. You'll never be worthy. Go back to your life.
With your dad, who also says you're never worthy of anything.
Yeah.
He created the first incel.
Exactly. Pretty much. Pretty much. And he's like, decides he's going to spend his life trying to figure out what happened because no one will ever believe him. So then you flash present day Philadelphia, the young Billy Batson, has been on the run over and over and over again because when he was a little kid, we see that his mother, he got lost from his mother in his crowd and has since been going from foster home to foster home. And he's like, no, I don't want to be in a foster home. I want to find my mother and figure out what happened to her. So he's a little difficult to deal with, but basically a good kid on the whole. He's just got this obsession. No, my mom is looking for me out there somewhere. I've got to find her. I've got to find out what happened and why we can't be with each other again. But he's been freshly put into a brand new home, filled with kids that is not as, Jack Dylan Grazier, the young kid who plays his best friend in the movie, Freddy, says, this shit gets totally Game of Thrones up in here, in a joking way, but is actually a pretty almost obnoxiously loving home. The foster home that we like to fantasize all foster homes are like.
Right?
All 10% of foster homes.
Well, it's like a whole group of kids that are all very different, both personality-wise and ethnically, of course. All have their own purpose to serve clearly in this family unit, but he's still not having it. Freddy, who is crippled, is like, because of course he is.
he's like Jiminy Cricket.
He's the extreme Ghostbusters character with the wheelchair.
What?
I was thinking he's like that extreme Ghostbusters character. We need every ethnicity in one crippled person. Put him in a wheelchair, give him a cane, whatever.
Yeah, he's got a little little arm brace.
Yes.
He's got like MS or something.
Never even explained what he has.
It's just a crutch, which he does like comment on a lot. Like it's almost like he makes the joke.
He uses the crutch as a crutch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's almost like the movie is commenting on it. We get it.
He's like, I feel like he's kind of like the most developed character, like in a sense.
I mean, and that little kid's a good little – he was in The It, right? He's in that show, The It.
Alan, why don't you look it up on Google?
Was he in that show that came out? Scary show?
He may be crippled, but he's clearly superhuman because he gets hit by a pickup truck and survives. I mean, yeah,
sure enough. Anyway, so when this ability when our kid Billy Batson gets this ability, because basically he shows that, hey, I'll stand up to bullies, so the wizard summons him, also saying, by the way, I kind of ran out of options here because that old Dr. Savanna, Mr. Savanna character showed up and took all my seven deadly sins, which are sort of stone imprisoned monsters that was kind of his job to guard. You had one job, dude. Like
he was old.
I don't even have a test anymore. So guess what? You're Shazam.
Instead, he wasted 50 years on a really useless seeker spell that clearly found like 70 other people that were completely useless.
That spell just weakened his ass.
So the question is like, because the idea was that Shazam should be totally and utterly pure of heart. And you're like, well, this is America. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, we have the internet now. By the time they can work the internet, they're no longer pure of heart.
They got the lust, man.
You pretty much have to make an infant Shazam to make it work.
Yeah. I do like that they make all the easy jokes that you kind of want about. It's like, well, an old guy that I met on the subway told me to hold his staff and then say his name. Wait. Scratch that. Never mind. Ignore
that. The test is basically hold my staff and say my name, or listen to this ball, and this ball tells you, hey, do you want everything in the world you've ever wanted? Then, you know, come and grab the ball.
The ball had like already, you know,
it was Pandora's box,
pretty much. And so like it was just like whoever,
because Dr. Savannah claimed
whoever the spell gets is like first come, first serve.
Yeah, it's pretty much like, oh shit, hey, come on in. Sorry, I should totally clean up in here.
Yeah.
Yes, you're Shazam now. Sorry, no other choice. No, you're Shazam. Shut up. And so this kid turns into Zachary Levi, who is like we said earlier, is just built like a brick shit house, and he's huge, but is Zach Levi. One thing he's good at is playing this totally unassuming, like, oh gee whiz type character. Whoa, always like a kid like point of view, which is very odd juxtaposition against his huge, very manly physique that he's got here. So it's the two of them for a while, him and the young Freddy going through the whole, which I think works really well. Let's videotape cell phone cover you, like trying out all the things to figure out what your superpowers are, which is quite amusing. And I feel like where the movie stumbles a bit is where the comic book I've heard reportedly stumbles a bit as well, is that they feel like they kind of need to make Billy a super selfish brat for a long, long time in order to make it have resonance when he learns, like, what it means to be a hero
He's, like, trying to pose selfies with people for money and, like, shooting lightning, you know, from his hands, like, trying to get cash to go, you know, do whatever he's going to do, either go to a strip club.
Titties.
Yeah, see some titties or whatever, but it's like, I don't know, that for me, like, that went on a little too far.
It goes a little long, and my other issue is, though, Freddy is clearly almost just as bad. He's clearly using him, and Freddy never gets to come up into this movie where it's like, hey, you shouldn't use your friend, or hey, you know.
What,
you
is got, he like, using
him? He is, because also with the money thing, like,
I think he's
living vicariously through him, which he cops to.
I mean, but he gets beat up.
But he gets beat up because he uses him also to say, oh yeah, you shouldn't beat me up because I know this guy. There's also the thing where there's that first scene where he stops, well, tries to stop a mugging, and then they get paid for it, and he's like, oh, we shouldn't do this. And Freddy's like, no, we got like $70. Like, oh, that's great. It's like, so wait, one of you actually has morals, and the one who's like super obsessed with superheroes is like, no, let's just take her money. And I'm like, neither of you are good people, but Freddy kind of gets off where he doesn't have to learn a lesson, whereas, you know, we expect to, Billy's like, no, Billy, you're using your powers for your own selfish gain. It's like, you both were.
Man, well, I think I'm on Freddy's side on this.
I disagree a little, because I think in that moment, and at least in that portion, it's just like they're both like kids who are super excited by everything. And just the prospect of getting any money is just like, holy shit, we got $70. Like,
did you ever have $70 as a kid? Yeah. Never. Like, when you're that young, what are you going
to
do?
Well, that's I think, one of the problems that the movie encounters is that it feels like it needs to go fully into the whole, like, no, Billy becomes a totally selfish dick.
Yeah.
When I feel like he would have already had enough with the sequence of, like, no, let's, like, make an ATM, shoot lightning in an ATM machine to get money with these things. Like, no, you don't do that because you're supposed to be a hero.
Yeah.
I feel like we got enough without having to spend an extra half an hour on him.
It's the weakest
obnoxious
part.
Asshole.
Yeah. Agreed. It's 2 hours and 12 minutes. I definitely could have cut some of that fat.
Like, and a lot of that is the rift between him and Freddy, like, seems very forced because the movie needs it.
Yeah.
And, like, and it's kind of him pushing him over the limit to be like, he seems like more of a dick than he was. Like, but they don't really show you the power going to his head, type of thing. It's just like he's just a bigger dick now than he was, like, in the last scene. Like, literally, you cut from one scene to the next, and he seems like almost a different person. It's weird.
And it's weird because there's moments where you think he should learn his lesson. Like, the one little sister, like, calls him big brother, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm not really your brother," and he, like, feels really bad about how sad that made her.
That's a nice moment.
Yeah, you would think that would teach him, oh, I should be a dick, and then he becomes a superhero, and then he becomes a dick again.
Yeah, I mean, again, the movie even addresses that to some degree. It goes like, hey, yeah, you got these powers, you turned into a bully and a dick, and there are bully characters as well to bring that where the audience goes, oh, I get exactly where this kid is coming from. But the same point, the same time, it didn't feel to me continuous with the character of Billy Batson that they were building, that he would even go as far into being a selfish dick as he does.
Yeah.
It's just that, like, I'm enjoying Freddy and Billy hanging out, doing dumb shit as kids, and then when they make that dumb rift between them, that contrived rift, it's just like, that's not as fun to watch.
Yeah, I almost
feel like I was having a lot of fun, and then y'all brought it down with this.
Like, the supervillain showing up should be enough of, like, oh, shit.
There's conflict.
We had to be serious, but adding
that
extra.
But they make that so late in the movie, and I almost feel like the scene where with Mary, that he finds her when he's superheroing, to avoid spoilers on that, I almost feel like that one should almost be the one where he starts to kind of realize something, but instead, they just kind of try to hammer home more that he's a dick where he doesn't realize it, and it's like, no, this kind of feels like where you should start connecting with some of the other characters more than another scene where you should see how much of a dick he is, because when the villain shows up, it's literally like the last quarter of the movie, and it just barrels through a whole large fight scene where you see nothing, and then it develops nothing for the character.
I'll say that it doesn't drop the ball like other DC movies, like Wonder Woman, where it's just completely off rails and it shits the bed in the third act. It's
although, like, the first two acts of Wonder Woman, I think, are overall stronger than the first two acts of this film.
Yeah. I actually,
I'm
with you on that. I think the first two acts of Wonder Woman are great. The third act's kind of whatever.
Yeah. Whereas this is the reverse.
The third act for this was great.
I thought the third act was amazing.
For me, the third act, there was no stakes, and then they do something that, well,
yeah, well, you're not going to say what it is.
They do something where it splits between two fight scenes in a very predictable way, and one is just two people flying around, and, like, the other one is just bad CG monsters fighting against
the people.
Other people.
Yeah.
So I didn't really resonate with it, the ending. Like, I was like, it's cooler than that we got with Ares.
I think it's a very good third act, but I agree. Again, the CGI on the monsters or on the sins, I think, is just average at best, and it feels like with all the money they have for this movie, that's where they're cutting it, is on their villains main attack.
It seemed like they didn't have a lot of money. It seemed like it was a low budget movie.
There are things I could see that told me it was extremely low budget. Every exterior shot of the high school,
only under $100 million.
Jesus, that's insane. Yeah. This movie's great for that.
Every exterior shot of the high school had the same like sequence of this girl with a Batman backpack running to hug her friend. Every exterior shot had that. I'm like, they used it over
that
and over.
Yeah, bad
like, this movie had no money.
Yeah. Did you see as well? There was a sequence where I'm sorry, I'm thinking basically the same thing, but there was a lot of like repeated stuff going on there. Yeah. You were like,
the girl with the Batman backpack is all over that high school. Like, she must have
been, yeah. like same extras, featured yeah. extra, as yeah. they say. But you know, I'm surprised because it seems like Al and I are on like the side of the third act rule. That's what saved this movie.
I'm kind
of.
You guys have no, I enjoyed the.
You know, I think the third act is really good. I just I want to say I don't want to let the CGI off the hook, but I guess with that budget is pretty good for that budget.
Yeah, with stuff like that, I guess we come to expect a certain level when it comes to these superhero movies. But I mean, looking at the budget, and I remember when I saw this, like I was pretty forgiving of it because the third act took a turn. That I haven't seen any DC movie take a chance like that.
Sure.
Like, this, like, kind of blow up my expectations. It's always just, like, the two guys with big sparks versus each other. Like, the DC, especially the finales of those, are just, like, such a bore. Mm-hmm. And this one, I was just like, holy shit, this is exciting.
Because they did something that Marvel previously was really good at doing, which was throwing a thing inside of the history of a character continuity that you don't expect to happen this early on in their movies. And for fans of canon, you go, that's so amazing. I mean, there's a thing that happens in this movie that's the equivalent of at the end of the first Iron Man, Tony Stark going, oh yeah, I'm Iron Man.
Right, it's something that me and Chris both said, like, I saw the groundwork for this earlier in the movie because we knew that
but
much.
We didn't think it was going to happen.
Yeah, and I admit, that stuff was great. I guess my issue is, and why I keep bringing up the CGI, is how much they use the sins in this movie. Whenever it almost feels like they use them too much to the point where it's like, if you use them a little bit less and made them more, you know, have more of a punch when they showed up, you know, there's enough points of them just standing around doing nothing. Like, at least two scenes or three scenes where they just stand around, not menacing. They're just there.
I do agree with you guys, if not in that the... I mean, the CG's not terrible, but it is about 10 years out of date. It's still... It looks passable.
Sure.
I didn't hate it, but you're like, this is fucking 2019. Why isn't this better for a DC movie? But my real problem is I didn't think the character design was that great. There was one of them, Gluttony, that was cool.
Oh, man.
It
was awesome.
Yeah. It was like an Iron Maiden where he had like...
It looked like a Cenobite from fucking Hellraiser.
But the rest of them were really dull.
Yeah, the rest of them were really lazy interpretations of the seven deadly sins. And I was just like... That was my other complaint with it, is like... At least make them interesting.
I'm telling you what, that creative design. The artistic direction budget, he got done with Gluttony, and it was like, you're spending too much time on this shit. Yeah, they got the rest.
He even kind of makes a joke about it, because he's like, Pride is the big one, Gluttony, well, that's obvious. And then he, like, just speeds through the other one, because you can't tell which is which.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I say, I feel the strongest point of this movie is Zachary Levi.
Oh, he's great.
Who is a treasure. He really gets that kid in a superhero spot thing. And especially in that third act where he finally goes, okay, I'm figuring out how to be a hero. And like, his biggest concern at that point is trying to figure out what his catchphrase is.
Basically. He's one of the most charismatic dudes around, and I'm surprised he's done in more things because he can really just hold your attention on screen because he has that personality.
I think the children actors in this movie, all of them, are really great, too. So, I will put them, you know, just under, especially Freddy and Dilly. Like,
it's the strongest really with that ensemble them. Really rolling, yeah.
But I will say that, like, wow, what a boring choice for Mark Strong as the bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who is, like...
Who is a bad guy.
I'm just like, is that all you're ever going to give this guy? Who really does have leading man looks, but for some reason someone in Hollywood decided, no, you're typecast as a bad guy now.
Once you go bald.
Yeah. It's because he's bald and he's got a crooked tooth.
When Mark Strong is Merlin in Kingsman, I was like, oh, thank God, a good guy character who does not betray everyone. Jesus Christ, Mark Strong, you hit the jackpot on this character.
I mean, I will say, I really felt like he was kind of sleepwalking his way through this, too. He was like, I've done this a billion fucking times.
It was definitely villain paint by numbers.
I think the kid version of him gets more lines than Mark Strong does.
To me, like, he was kind of what embodied, like, the character arcs and the plot of this movie. Like, who they chose as the bad guy as an actor was, like, what they chose to do with the script. It's just seemed to me, I guess y'all are saying, like, yeah, you felt that impact with what they did with the third act that I didn't feel. To me, it was all kind of like, it felt like big with a superhero movie, and that's what was delivered, and I'm really happy for it, but I was hearing all this buzz, you know, at some point it was like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I was like, fuck yeah, and these trailers, fuck yeah, and like, Zachary Levi's, like, he looks great. I'm going to love this. And I just kind of ended up liking it, you know. So I was just, I kind of bought into the hype, and it just, I wanted to be blown away, but.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I keep going to your final thoughts.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a 6.5 Elvis Presley's out of 10, because he modeled his entire look after Captain Marvel.
Fair enough. Ben?
So, I don't think it, while it, I don't think it's necessarily as clever or funny as many of the Marvel movies, I will say whoever did Punch Up on this movie does deserve some credit for finding some really great gems. I mean,
there's laugh out loud moments.
We haven't really mentioned, this movie is funny.
Yeah, no, it's very funny. Because the scene when he turns into Captain Marvel and ends up back on the train is actually really great. Which is like, all of a sudden, like, a really loud guy's in his face, like, you know, man, gold shoes and a gold shirt with a red jacket and, you know, and a cape that's all white. I didn't think it should work, but you know what it does? It works for you, man. You work in it. I'm like, all right, fine. You call it out the costume, making fun of it's pretty good. I got to give you that one.
I've always had problems with the Shazam costume or Captain Marvel costume.
I thought it looks pretty badass.
Always, every time I see it, I think of the Simpsons bit, like, or not Simpsons, I'm sorry. Guy with the big guy, little coat.
Tommy Boy.
I love, because it's like, huge guy!
Tiny little cape.
I love that cape. It's like this little side cape. It's like, it's not expected.
I keep looking at it and I keep thinking, seeing him go, I don't want to be a pirate.
I am glad, though, that they kind of took it from, Zach, you remember, what's the DC, the fighting game?
Injustice.
It's kind of more the Injustice costume and a little bit of New 52 where it has the hood, but it's a slightly longer cape and it's the white cape now. And actually, it's a good version of the costume. And there's other costumes in this movie that are references to classic comics that I liked a lot. It was good to see. I think there's a lot of great design in this. Just, I agree. The villain, I don't even know if he had a name. Like, it doesn't matter. He's just bad guy of equal power with the seven deadly sins. Like, it really doesn't matter. The biggest thing in this movie is like, oh, both characters have really shitty biological families. That's all this movie cares about. Is it's a story of, it's not, it doesn't matter about your family. It's the family you find, which is a good story, but I don't know. I don't think it really works at a deeper level, and I don't think a superhero movie needs that, but it tried so hard to have a deeper meaning with that as well, and just, I feel like it kind of made that a secondhand story to the fun of a kid in a superhero body. Overall, though, I had a good time with it. I think it might be something I like better than Wonder Woman, just because overall it stuck a landing, and it builds something up that I'd actually even be more excited to see the next movie, because there's a lot of groundwork for something really cool. I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10 weird caterpillar creatures.
JC?
So I'm someone who doesn't mind the DC movies. Like, I flaws and all, for the most part, I kind of like them. And I feel like each movie has its own, like, one thing about it that's super redeeming. Like Wonder Woman's got the No Man's Land scene. The Man of Steel has a really epic score, and I love the third act. You know, Aquaman's got this scene where they're in the desert. I love all that part. And so with this, I feel like Zachary Levi is the shining, you know, standout part of it. It gets a lot of credit for sticking to the humor and the humor not feeling forced the way it does in Justice League, which is one of the more cringy parts about it. And so it gets credit for that. But I think in sacrificing all that humor, in getting all that humor, I think you sacrifice a lot of really great action, which doesn't seem to come until the third act. And so by the time it does come, I like it. I like the third act for the most part. Overall, it was a little overhyped for me. I heard all the amazing hype out of it. To me, it kind of breeds, I'm not a toxic DC fanboy or anything like that, but it does feel to me like people are just grateful to not see Zack Snyder direct a DC movie or have influence on it.
Amen.
And that's really where I think the overpraising of it comes from, is people are just too harsh on Zack Snyder, I think. But yeah, I would give it 6 out of 10 plush tigers.
Wow, this is talking the guy who's defended the worst DC movies that have been made is giving this a 6 out of 10?
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Alan.
Yeah, I think you made a pretty good point, like, talking about how each of these DC movies have, like, something in them that is redeemable, which I pretty much agree with. Like, they'll have, like, a scene here and there, and the problem is stitching those together to make, like, a great movie for me. I still think Wonder Woman does it the best, but I think this is right behind it. Because aside from that, like, kind of long, laborious second act where they have that rift, I think mostly this works. It's an origin story, which we don't get a lot of origin stories anymore. Like if they are, they're kind of turned on their head, like Spider-Man into Spider-Verse. There's like a hyper-active origin story. And then the Marvel movies have, for the most part, done away with origin stories because, like, we're used to those tropes by this point. And it surprisingly works in this for the most part. Yeah, I like it. It's funny. It moves quick. I have no connection to this character at all. Like, coming from comic books, I know the basic idea, and I know, like, the third, like, when the thing happens in the third act, I knew, like, somewhere in my brain that that was a thing that could happen, but it was really unexpected for me. Yeah, it's good. And talking about, like, the overreaction because it's not a Zack Snyder-led DC movie, I definitely think is a big part of it. But I also think, like, the franchise as a whole, the DC franchise, needed some correction.
Yeah.
It's still keeping...
Or a lot.
Yes, a lot, yeah. Like I said, good scenes, bad movies.
I think they're even trying to steer away from being a universe right now.
Yeah, who knows what the future of it is? I don't even know what
the connection should be. I don't think they know at this point what the future of it is.
But as just... With all that, not even thinking about other DC movies or anything, this movie by itself is really entertaining. It's really funny. Levi's a charmer. I'm going to go 7 deadly sins out of 10. Those three forgotten ones.
God damn it, that was perfect.
Yeah, I did enjoy this film, and I did have high expectations coming from some of that early stuff, coming from the great marketing for this, that basically was like, hey, guys, who haven't liked any other DC films, we're looking at you, Marvel fans. We made this movie for you. And I want more than anything for DC to get their movies right. And it doesn't have to be exactly in Marvel's mold, but so far it's been so toxic bro-y as it's gone along that it's been hard for me to really follow, or just made inane mistakes, which for me was Aquaman, which was like, this feels like the post Tim Burton Batman sequels. Sorry.
That's good.
I mean, there's a lot of things I actually genuinely like about Aquaman, and I think it advances the character well, where I'm like, cool, I want to see the character in another movie.
There's a lot,
but maybe something a little better written than this one was. But like, this one is okay. It was a smart idea to latch onto the formula of the movie Big for this and the comedy involved with that. Great idea. And executed well, maybe about 70% of the time. There's some jokes that kind of fall super embarrassingly flat here and there. There's a whole running joke with a guy dressed up in a Santa Claus outfit that's just kind of exhausting, quite frankly.
The final joke with it is pretty good. But
that was one of those, like, not funny, not funny, not funny, not funny. Oh, it's funny now. Yeah, like, it was weird.
But then it kept going. Yeah. It was like, what?
But there's a lot still here that is charming, despite all the things that don't work. It's funny as much as they're like, okay, we need to take a step back now that Snyder's no longer in the compound and reconfigure and look, not be like so aggro that we refuse to look at why Marvel's films have been so wildly successful with audiences and critics, which I'm sorry, is just a fact.
Yeah.
You can argue all you want on a personal level, but that is a statistical fact.
I think Aquaman is the first one to do well budgetarily.
Right. And, well, no, they've all done well budgetarily.
Really?
Yeah, no, they've all made well. Yeah, but making money is not, like, a sign of quality per se.
No, I agree. I'm just saying for how they should be judging it from how much is this actually costing us making us?
Right. And it feels like they definitely are starting to learn some of those lessons. They're trying to still do it their own way, but they're doing it in a very 90s way. There's so much about this movie that's 90s. Oh, my God.
How do we get two 90s Captain Marvel movies the same?
But the one thing they didn't learn that really would have made a huge difference here, that even Marvel didn't get at first. It took them a while. Make the villain interesting. The villain is not interesting.
They tried so hard.
I don't even know if they tried so hard. It's smart. When they started with, like, the origin of the start of this movie is the origin of the villain. I'm like, cool. That's the right
they
step.
They dedicated time.
But the moment
I still didn't care that scene.
Yeah, but the moment he's grown up.
They make the same mistake early MCU does in that the superhero and villain are basically mirrors of each other. And
they also tried way too hard to make you feel for the villain. Like, cool, everything about this guy's life sucks ass right now.
The moment he's grown up, you just don't care anymore. Yeah. You're like, okay,
he's no
now
longer
you're,
character.
You're a generic mustache-twirling villain with
nothing
interesting
about you. Yeah, plus it's like, boo-hoo, dude, grow up.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, your dad and your brother were shitheads? Happens to everyone,
yeah, like, who cares? Like, yeah.
But I will say, in the end, I do think this is definitely one of the better DCU modern films, and I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10. Mortal Kombat finishing moves,
fatalities, or brutalities, or Bay Ballad, the
actually,
baby one.
There's a baby
where you turn them into little babies.
What, really?
I think it's like the inverse of the third act of this movie.
I thought there was like a crossover with the Dead or Alive fighting series.
They turn into little tiny babies, and that's like how you win.
And then you smash them.
No, they start crying or they pee.
They
their
literally
pants.
Have to grow up.
No, you spit on the Ferris wheels instead.
So it's Zack Snyder, basically. You turn them into it's the comparison for here.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, that may be insensitive. I'm not even sure anymore.
Neither Zack Snyder.